Hi, I'm Wilford Brimley.
When you first find out from your doctor, you've got diabetes, it can be mind-boggling. Diabetes. I'm a diabetic. Liberty will even give you diabetes right to your door. And you'll ask yourself, how in the world am I going to afford all this stuff? Insulin, pills, doctor's visits,
blood sugar, Medicare.
Pills, diabetes.
Diabetes. You like that?
No.
Oh, it doesn't matter if you like it or not. It's the Diabetes Show, where we're covering 31 days of diabetes here on Cake Wolf's Diabetes Hour. No?
No.
Thanks for joining us today. This is the 31 days of Halloween, Cake Wolf's Happy Hour, where every day for the month of October, we are doing the show Monsters, a horror anthology that ran from the late 80s to early 90s. This is thanks to Darian Brock, Miss Monica, and Mr. Buddy of the Padded Room podcast. Find them on paddedroom.podbean.com for crazy wild antics. So, we're going to be closing out season 2 of Monsters here today, doing 3 episodes. Episodes 22, 23, and 24. And, then tomorrow we'll be moving on to season 3, and there's only 24 episodes left to go.
Only?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, within 10 days, I suppose. It's kind of sad closing this out so soon. Maybe we'll just have to keep rolling with it, and next month.
You see,
next month we'll do Tales from the Dark Side, right?
I see me gaining like 5 hours of my life back every week.
All right, so kicking it off with The Gift, which is episode 22 that aired May 20th of 1990. This one has a director by the name of Jeffrey Wolfe, no relation to myself. Writer of D. Emerson Smith, and it stars Abe Vigoda, which everyone will know, John Boldner, Brad Greenquist, Zach Overton, and Carlos Lachu. So quite a big cast here, starting off with Abe Vigoda. You'll know him as Tessio from The Godfather. He is all over the place. You'll notice him quite frequently. Also, Brad Greenquist, you'll know him from Pet Sematary as Victor Pascal, or Annabelle Creation as Victor Palmieri. So it seems like he enjoys playing people named Victor. Lastly, Carlos Lachu, he is playing as the monster in this episode, and he also played as a little bit of a beast. He was an alien in Stargate. He played Anubis. Anubis in Stargate. So
that's Anubis a dog in Stargate?
He was an alien. He was like a little boy that was actually an alien.
Okay.
Wore the Anubis head, though.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. I'm going to allow Cake Bitch here.
You're going to allow me
to cover this episode. I'll do the next two.
Well, thank you for your permission.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I
have to give you permission. Your mother has diabetes, and I know how awful it is.
It's not that awful. She has a pump. Her life is pretty normal. She eats cake and candy sometimes. It's okay.
She's got diabetes, though. There's like 5,000 Wilford Brimley diabetes songs on the internet.
I think you might have sent them all to my friend today. Maybe all right. Not all of them, but half of them. All right, so In The Gift, we follow the story of this prep kid who is kidnapped for ransom by two gentlemen. That would be Dolan and William, correct? Okay. And when the kid asks why he was chosen, the older man says that some people have too much money and some people don't have enough. And so they kidnapped him, and it's called distribution of wealth. And basically what they're trying to lay out here is that poor people are criminals and mean. So the kid snaps back that it's called kidnapping, and the kid is correct.
Abe Vigoda playing as a villain? A criminal? Who would have thought? Abe Vigoda is playing as Dolan here.
See, I don't even know who he is because I've never seen The Godfather. Okay. This guy just seems like a nameless henchman to me.
All right. Well, we'll play with some severed horse heads. And, you know,
that's part of The Godfather. Yeah. That's about as far as I know.
You'll get some Godfather there. We'll go out and play with some horse heads. Does that sound fun?
No.
No?
Uh-uh.
Put them in the bed with us. Have some kinky... No?
No. Like, now you're taking it to serial killer level. I don't know what to do with this.
You're the one that hasn't seen The Godfather, so I can just make up whatever.
Okay. Well, anyhow, they take this kid to the basement to get a blanket for him. They take this rich kid down to the basement so that he can find his own blanket. And the kid sees a shovel and takes the opportunity to try and hit this younger kidnapper over the head. But the kid's a little short, and he gets his shoulders instead. And so they decide that they're going to lock this kid in the basement.
Yeah, the kid hits the dude about as hard as a grandma throwing a Nerf ball, you know.
It was pretty unimpressive, but I think they're trying to show the kid's, like, not really well-versed at, you know.
Violence.
Violence, and also, he's short. He's little. He's a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
So this is when...
That's why you gotta teach your kids at a young age to use knives. Protect themselves. Teach them how to use guns, knives, cement bricks, whatever you got.
Sure. Or don't be so rich that they get kidnapped. I don't know. Because apparently it only happens for ransom. This is when our monster is introduced to us.
Darian Brock, he's teaching his kid how to use hammers.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a pretty good skill. He throws
hammers at his 3-year-old. That's how he teaches his kid how to use weapons.
Okay. So this is when the wolf man shows up. He jumps out of the corner of this basement to try and save the kid from this bad man. And this bad man shoots the wolf man, who apparently, we learn later, has come to the cabin to try and recuperate from other wounds that he had sustained in trying to help someone. They lock the kid up in the basement with this monster, and the kid quickly learns, after the monster touches him in a very aggressive manner, that the monster's not a monster at all. He's actually a man who can shapeshift, and when he's in his monstrous form, he heals faster. So that's why he is looking like a wolf man right now, trying to recuperate from previous wounds and now current wounds. And,
yeah. You thought it looked like a wolf?
Yeah, I think it
I thought
like
he looked kind of like Harry from Harry and the Hendersons.
I don't know Harry and the Hendersons.
Basically
either.
Bigfoot.
Well, I mean, he looks kind of ape-like. I think he had more wolf-like features, though.
Okay.
He had, like, the sharp teeth, and he kind of looks a little like a dog. Sure. And an ape combined.
I don't see it.
All right, well, I'm gonna call him the wolf man because it's usually werewolves that people shapeshift to.
What about Hangyokai? Some cultures don't have the wolves. Some of them have like shark, were sharks. Hangyokai.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you being pretentious right now?
I think it's more nerdy than pretentious.
Okay. So this kid and the monster are down in the basement bonding. The monster comes out, I'm using monster loosely because he's not really a monster. The monster comes out, though, and says, "No good. There's no good places when the world is full of guns and the hearts of men are empty." That's probably the deepest line you'll get out of this. And the kid shares that his parents probably don't even realize that he's missing. Well, they probably didn't realize he was missing until they got the ransom note, because they don't pay any attention to him. The monster's goal in life is to save the good and banish the evil. And he tells the kid the story of how he came to get his powers. He was a prisoner on a ship in the revolutionary time of America's history. And he had information on a Pennsylvania man that I guess the British were seeking out. And he refused to tell the British where this Pennsylvania man was hiding out. And this older man on the ship was so touched by what he did that he transferred his own powers, which were the only thing keeping him alive in the ship, to William. And this will come into play later. Let me see. I'm losing track now. You got me all, like, confused by things. Oh, so it turns out that the kid's parents are going to pay the ransom, and he promises to come back and help the monster. And while they're waiting, the kid asks the monster to use his powers to try and find out what the bad men are planning to do, because he doesn't really trust them. And so apparently one of the gifts this shapeshifter has is also he can read people's minds. He finds out that the bad men are planning to kill them both with fire. And the kid throws a fit because William is too weak to do anything to help them. And then the kid kind of breaks down and says, "I'm just so scared. I don't want to die." And the monster basically gives the kid an offer. He says he has the power to transfer his soul out of his body and switch it with another kid's. So essentially he could put another child in his place and that child would die instead. And the kid says, no, I can't do that. Like, what kind of person would I be? I just couldn't live that way. So this is when Mr. Monster Man William realizes that the kid has a good heart, and he decides that as a parting gift, he's going to transfer his gift to the kid so that the kid can overpower his captors and survive. So that happens, and the kid's now the monster, and the monster is now William from the Revolutionary War, and the kid kills the bad man, and William dies because he's been shot up too many times. The end.
Yeah, and there's like some kind of supposed to be like touching moment with the kid and William sitting there and like talking to each other in one another's heads. But yeah, well, I don't know. I didn't really get the feels from it.
Oh, I don't know. I thought this was a pretty sweet episode.
Yeah, I guess you did.
Yeah, I liked it.
So what would you say you would rate this monster here?
Well, the monster...
This Bigfoot
It's thing. Hard to rate him because he's not really a monster at all. Based on his looks, I mean, it was one of the better looking monsters, I would say, practical effects wise.
Okay.
So, I mean, I liked him, though, as a human being. I'm going to give the monster a 3.5.
Sure. I'm going to give the monster a 2. I think he looked cool. Yeah, it was fine. What about the, like, changing anything of this episode, or would it work as a movie?
You could probably make this into a movie. I can't imagine it being anything other than a kid's movie, with the moral being, like, don't sell yourself short and don't sell out, because good things will happen to you if you're a good person. What would I change? I think I would make some of the characters more nuanced. Like, I know they're only working with a 20-minute time frame, but, right. Like, I think getting to know some of the backstory of how the bad men came to be bad men, and maybe some flashbacks showing that the prep kid wasn't just, you know, prep kids are usually kind of like vapid and they mm-hmm. don't really understand the world. Maybe showing that the kid has some genuine goodness, that he understands that there's some bad stuff happening and he tries to be a good person anyway. I don't know.
Sure. I mean, I guess it could work as like a kid's movie.
Yeah.
But I don't really see it working as anything else outside of those lines.
No.
It's fine. I give the episode itself a 2.5. I think it's serviceable. Didn't really grab my attention too hard. I think it was just a little bit too warm and fuzzy with too much of a message.
Too much of a message.
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't for me. So, what's the lesson that you got here?
Well, I'm gonna also rate the episode as a 3.5.
Sure.
I mean, I think the lesson really is just to be a good person even when it's hard.
Sure, why not? I guess.
You didn't get that?
I mean, what if you're in that situation, you feel like you're going to die, you've got an opportunity there, just turn someone else in. Wouldn't you, like, what about a shitty bully, you know?
I don't know that it was framed that it would be a bad kid in his place, though. I think it was just a random person.
I don't know. I feel like I would be filled in at that point, knowing that the monster is being too vague for a reason, and just sort of determining, well, this is a trump card kind of thing. Like, he's just fucking with me, so I'm just gonna say, yeah, sure, that's not gonna happen. We'll just die, because at that point I know that it's him just testing me. Like, it was so obvious that it was a test.
Really? Because I kind of had to tell you it was a test.
No. Yeah. It was obvious. It was very blatant. Now,
I had to remind you of the monster's story.
I don't know, Christina. I think you're getting your wires crossed here.
I think
you've got diabetes.
You're trying to look smarter.
I think you've got diabetes. So Night of the Demon, we'll say that is the recommendation for this. This was recently covered on StreamingHorrorSociety.com. They did a movie called The Wraith, and in that we had Boss Butcher and Darian Brock talking about a movie that was recommended to Darian by Mr. Boss Butcher called Night of the Demons from 1980. It's essentially a really cheesy Bigfoot movie. This is one that's got some pretty wacky kills in it. And I believe it has one of the very first sleeping bag kills. So just basically Bigfoot going around acting like a nut. Check that out on StreamingHorrorSociety.com. The review is called The Wraith. And you'll hear some more about Night of the Demon from Mr. Boss Butcher. Moving on to the next episode here, we've got The Bargain. This one aired May 27th of 1990, and this is episode 23 of season 2. This one has a director and writer by the same name, Tom Noonan. Are you familiar with Mr. Tom Noonan?
I have no idea. I don't commit this stuff to memory. Let me look at his face again. He looks familiar.
Yeah, he's done a lot of stuff. He's the Ripper in The Last Action Hero, which
is... Does he do TV?
He's done a lot of TV.
I didn't recognize any of the movies.
Last Action Hero is a wacky one. That's got Arnold Schwarzenegger in, like, this fantasy world. It's basically this kid gets essentially a golden ticket, and he goes inside of a movie with his favorite action star. That's Arnold Schwarzenegger. And once he's in the movie... he's going on adventures with Arnold, and there's, like, a legit killer that they cross paths with, and things get all real because Arnold's used to coming out on the other end unscathed in this, like, fake world of movies that he's living in.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's put to the real test against an actual serial killer. Played by Tom Noonan.
He's the serial killer.
Yes. One of our actresses is... Kim Greist, and she was Molly Graham in Manhunter. She's done a couple of other things as well, mainly Manhunter for horror reference there. So, our other actors, Kevin Gere and Sharon Scharth. And we've got Sarah, played by Kim Greist, who's running a used bookstore, and she seems very lonely. She's got this guy named Joe, played by Kevin Gere, that's coming in, like, every week or so on, whatever. And he's basically coming in there to buy real high-class literature, like fancy French poets and the whole shebang. He's, like, picking up Heraclitus and, you know, I don't know. Can you think of some of the titles that he's picking up? Like,
yeah,
real...
I have no idea. Did real they obscure say the stuff. Titles? Because she, like, picked up books and then
some of them
was,
they
like,
did.
Not interested.
Yeah.
And picked up books and he wasn't interested.
So... essentially, he's going in there, picking up fancy pants books and saying they're not for him. They're for a friend of his. Joe doesn't read. He says that it's all for a friend. And Sarah thinks that there's something special about Joe, so she keeps on him, trying to give him book recommendations. And she's, like, swelling. You can just feel the swell of those pussy lips just juicing up in between her legs.
Really?
You get that?
She seems super duper clingy and not necessarily turned on.
She is juiced up for Joe.
Like, she is desperate for his attention.
She wants a cup of Joe, is basically what's going on there. And he doesn't really have interest in her. He doesn't even look at her. And... I mean, she's not a hideous woman, but she's got some strange, like, skin thing going on.
They gave her acne.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay. So, she's got acne. but, yeah, she's not bad looking. She's a little bit mousy in appearance, which I guess works for... Right. Which kind of works for this whole librarian feel that they're going for. She, at night, gets all flustered with her situation. She calls herself a disgusting mole and starts paging through magazines just to try and get her mind off of things.
And I thought it was a slug.
She comes across a old, old vintage... What are those? Like, fashion magazine is what it was,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it looked like a girly
mag. It's like
mag.
A vintage...
Not a girly mag.
Fashion mag. And in the back...
Lady magazine.
There's, in the comics that I used to get as a kid, in the back there were things where you could, like, cut out and mail away or call a number and get, you know, whatever. And, essentially that's what we got here. In the back of this fashion magazine, there's a number that says, need a new face, call this number. She calls the number and the person asks her what year she is in, because she's from the 90s, and she's essentially calling a 1920s number. So, an hour later, this strange woman shows up. She's got this really funky face that looks kind of like if her face was made out of a cupcake and someone, like, just palm-punched her in the side of the face.
Yeah,
that's kind of like what would happen. It's all, like, mishmash.
Yeah, her nose is smushed in, and she looks like she was burned with acid all over.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. Our girl, Sarah, here, she's not commenting on it. She's pretty nice about it. We find out that this woman's name is Carmen. She's got a special mask on her that she's going to sell to Sarah to make her beautiful, but Sarah... has to give up all of her books in order for this to happen. And Sarah, her books are her life. She's been collecting them since she was a child, and she only sells them to certain people that quote-unquote inspire her because they're part of her personal collection, which I think is a little bit strange.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she doesn't want to do this, but Carmen eventually talks her into it. The mask looks kind of basic. It's just a flesh-toned mask with a mouth hole and two eye holes. That's all you got there.
Yeah, and she's like, it's beautiful.
Yeah,
but it just looks like a mask.
It's very basic, but apparently Carmen tells her that if she wears it, there is no man that will be able to resist her. You know, that she's going to be completely... ripe and luscious, spring chicken. And so she pops it on and she starts complaining about the pain of it all. Sarah starts freaking out and Carmen tells her there's only one rule and the rule is you can't take it off. So, transition a little bit later in the week. We've got Joe come back. The bookstore is empty. He's a little bit stressed out about that. But a new woman who is the owner of oncoming television repair store. Or no, a television
video.
Store.
No, it's a videotape
store. A videotape store? Is that what it was?
Yeah, because he repairs okay. TVs.
Yeah, her name is Mandy. We can tell that it's Sarah. She's just got the acne cleared up and some
blonde hair now.
Yeah, so something she could have done for herself with like $10, right? And go into the Dollar General store.
Yeah, a little bit of clear cell and some hair dye.
Yeah. Anyway, he is infatuated with her, so he takes her back to his place and they get all frisky with one another and bump uglies. And then he ignores her, like guys usually do for the, you know, the one-night stands, right?
Yep, yep.
So she's not getting to, like, I don't feel like she's really fulfilled after one night, but she wants...
Well, no, because she's in love with him.
Yeah.
For some reason.
I don't get that, but yeah, she is for some reason. And so she is calling him obsessively and trying to get his attention. Eventually, they do meet up, and he basically tells her that he's been living a lie. He has no friend that reads. He's the one that reads, and he's ashamed of it. He's living a lie. Trying to think that he's smart when he's not by collecting these rare books. And it's really fucking weird because he says that he doesn't understand French. He picks up a French book. Maybe he's telling the truth. Like, he really is a fucking dunderhead. And he thinks that in some way, owning all of these smart books, they're going to, like, impart knowledge upon him.
He's trying to create this facade that he is an intelligent man, but
gotcha.
He doesn't feel like he's actually smart. So he's trying to compensate for that.
Why doesn't he just fucking read the books? Like, get ones that he can understand in his language
trying.
And read them.
Maybe he's trying.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it makes sense. It doesn't seem like he's trying because he keeps these things, like, locked away, practically.
They're just in a plastic bag on his floor. They're not locked
away. They're in a plastic bag that's tied up on top of his refrigerator.
Yeah, after she trips over it the night that they're together.
Wow, whatever.
He picks up the bag and puts it on top of
the I don't know. I just don't buy the fact that he's actually reading these things.
Did you watch this episode, by the way? Because you said that
what?
She doesn't
Look, you're getting on me about not watching these episodes.
You said she didn't say anything to Carmen about her face, but she literally says, if this mask can make anyone beautiful, why don't you use it?
Cake bitch happy hour, folks. Cake bitch happy hour.
You missed that part.
Yeah, well...
She's not, like, a great person, really.
I mean, these first two episodes are not my bag, I will say. So they were losing my interest, and yes, I was glazing over things...
I wrote that line down and then wrote bitch behind it.
Okay.
Because she thinks that beautiful people are better and that's why she hates herself. And then she just turned around and used that on Carmen when she showed up with the weird face.
Okay. So, yeah, basically we have him saying that he's living a lie, blah, blah, blah. Then we have him say that he's fallen in love with someone. He can't see Mandy anymore. He's marrying Sarah, his fiancée. And we've got a woman that looks like Sarah at the beginning of the show in the apartment with him. He puts his arm around her. Mandy starts freaking out, saying, no, you're wrong. That's not who you think it is. This is all a mistake. You see, this woman is wearing my face, and I'm essentially wearing her old face. And... Joe seems all flabbergasted by this and tells her, you know, that she's got issues. Mandy tries to recite a poem that she had spoken to Joe at the beginning of the episode. She can't remember the poem because she's no longer herself, but the new Sarah can recite it because she's basically assimilated her life. And she recites this, and Joe is once again reaffirmed that he is making the right choice here with Sarah, whom he had loved all along. And Mandy was just a one-night floozy-paloozy. She might be super gorgeous, but she doesn't have much going on upstairs, and that's not enough for him.
Just a video store.
Yeah, just the video store. I would have gone for Mandy. I like me the video store. That's my kind
of... You have a lot of books, dude.
Well, yeah. I mean,
you have more VHS tapes.
Yeah. So, anyway...
I have to reconsider this relationship.
Joe walks out, and Sarah has a moment with Mandy, basically says, look, I feel sorry for you, but I've had my time trying to sell that mask. Now it's yours. Finally, I've got a man, and if you want one, I suggest you do the same as I did and sell that mask to someone. And, yeah, that's where we're ending it. Pretty, whatever, episode, I guess. Kind of middle of the road again.
I was afraid that it was going to be like Listrega because it was like the same storefront, it seemed like, but this one was definitely better.
So what would you say you're giving the monster for this guy?
I liked the monster. I thought it was kind of creative.
Okay.
It reminded me of a Goosebumps episode.
Yep.
The
haunted mask.
I guess, yeah.
Where they couldn't take the mask off.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it I keep giving it 3.5.
That's fine. That's fine. Sure. I'm going to give this one a 2. I think it's serviceable enough.
We're talking about the monster rating, right?
Oh, yeah, the monster rating is a 2.5, I say. The episode itself, I'd give a 2. I think you could watch it. It's fine. It's not the strongest in the batch. Seems like Cake Bitch enjoys this one more than I do.
Well,
she enjoyed the first one as well more than I.
I think I'd give this one a 3. I didn't like this one quite as much as The Gift.
Okay.
But I thought it's, you know...
It did spark your interest more than myself, though.
Yeah, I mean, I was paying attention to it.
So, would you say that this would work as a movie, and is there anything you would change from it?
I think the concept could work as a movie.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't know if it's the acting in so many of these that are kind of, like, taking me out of it.
Yeah.
Like... Joe needs to be more compelling. If this girl is in love with him just from him coming in and pretending like he's not buying the books for himself,
right?
Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. Like, there should be more to it than that. So I think that's one of the things I would change.
Like, see, now,
make
I don't
Joe
think this,
more compelling.
I don't think this works as a movie. I don't. I think it's fine in the little 20-minute vignette that exists, and I think that's where it should stay.
I don't know. That face lady, she could be a pretty good villain.
The face lady looked cool, yeah.
Like, I mean, her story.
Sure.
And how that whole transfer works.
Maybe.
But, I mean...
I don't want it.
It would need a good writer and director.
I really don't want that, but, yeah.
I feel like you've watched movies that are even more shallow than this 20-minute episode.
Sure. Yeah, I have.
Snow Sharks.
But
comes to mind.
But at the same time, something like Avalanche Sharks, it's shallow, but there's like so much bouncing tit and just slapstick comedy
that you can't help but
enjoy it.
If that lady showed up and her tits were bouncing, then you would say make it a movie.
Is there more comedy to it? Is there some ridiculous gore?
You could make a little bit of comedy.
I mean, you throw in some boobs, some ridiculous gore,
then that elevates it.
Yes.
No.
It's a proven thing.
No.
It's a proven thing.
I don't think it's proven at all.
Yes. Mr. Ron Martin of the Resurrection Zombie 7 podcast always gives at least a 0.5 if they show breasts.
Well, then I want to give an extra point if it shows peen.
Okay. You're not going to find it much, but sure.
Okay.
You
need to find a movie that shows a lot of peen.
Not
one of those softcore porn ones.
There's one I can't think of what it's called, but it's like about like time traveling serial rapists, and like the show opens up with, I think it's called Don't Answer the Door. It's an Asian film, And it's got this dude that's got this giant penis just ramming it into people's assholes.
In other words, that would get a 1-star rating just because it shows peen.
There's a lot of peen in it, I remember. Anyway, moving on to the next episode, episode 24, we've got The Family Man. And this is not to be confused with Nicolas Cage's Family Man, the Christmas movie, which makes you want to gouge your eyes out. This is aired on June 3rd of 1990, episode 24 of season 2, the last episode of season 2 here. Our director is a man that goes by the name of Michael Warren Powell. Our writers are Alan Coulter and Gordon Rayfield. We've got some actors here: Michael O'Gorman, Annie Corley, Calvin Armitage, Kelly Rabke. And that's your cast. So, basically, there's a little boy, and he's me.
Did anybody do anything other than this?
The Annie Corley did a few things, but nothing that I care to take note of. Essentially, we've got a little boy played by Calvin Armitage. His name is Neil. And throughout the episode, nobody can pronounce his name, so they all just say Neil, Neil. You know, like the Neil. Aliens in Sesame Street that go mau 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 mau. Yeah,
sounds like that.
Yeah, they're all going Neil, 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 Neil. They can't say Neil, Neil. They go Neil.
We have decided that we are definitely not naming our child Neil, because if people can't pronounce the name and they just go Neil, it'll grow up to be an axe murderer out of frustration.
It sounds like, you know, you don't want to give this family pencils, if you get my drift. Because they're sounding a bit goofy here.
Neil. Even when they say it slow, they can't say it. Like, it is so bad.
Anyway, this kid, Neil, looks just like I did when I was a child. My hair was a little bit more curly and blonde, but other than that, he's like a spitting image of myself as a child, which was kind of creepy. Could not...
couldn't get past that?
No, I couldn't. It blew my mind. But basically... his father has recently died. His mother has started dating someone new. His father was a police officer. This new guy is a psychologist. And the mother and the sister are really digging this. The mother's digging this dude. The sister's on board with this new dude. The little boy...
she just wants to see her mom happy, and her mom is happy.
Right. The little boy, Neil, he wants nothing to do with any of it. He is not ready to give up the memory of his father. He thinks that it's too soon. And in a way, it kind of is. A year? That's too soon.
I thought it was like a year and a half.
A year and a half is still too soon.
It's quick. Like, but this is also like the 90s, where women were still in that whole, especially moms in the 90s, where they felt like they needed a man around the house.
She's got hot pants. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, you can wear hot pants and still think you need a man around the house.
I'm not saying that she's got like leopard printed pants on. I'm saying that her pants are on fire because her crotch, her vajayjay, is burning the midnight oil that is constantly leaking out of that hole there.
I don't know what the hell you're trying to say. She has a thing for the psychologist.
Yeah, she's too horny to keep it in her pants and give her kids at least 3 years to heal.
Seems like the daughter's like, whatever. Like, go find me a new daddy. So they're both like, we need a man around the house. And Neil's just like, I don't really like this guy already, even though I haven't met him.
Yeah, so he's not too happy about this. He's also wearing his father's glasses, and his mother bought him some new glasses, spent a lot of money on them, and Neil doesn't care. He doesn't want these new glasses. The new glasses that he has are the kind of glasses that I wore as a kid, which is also kind of creepy. The glasses that his father has, they're like these giant goggles that make it seem as though his father had cataracts. like, humongously thick glasses.
I'm like really sure that they did that just to emphasize how wrong the prescription was. Because his mom's trying to convince him to wear the new glasses so that his eyes don't get worse because he's wearing the wrong prescription.
Pretty crazy glasses. So
they're like black, thick rimmed. I mean, I love I loved his dad's glasses.
So we've got the new guy coming in. His name is Warren, and the mother is all about him. They're making out, and the daughter is into him right off the bat, because the first thing that Warren says to Angie, the daughter, is, now I know where your mom...
you must have gotten your mom's good looks.
That's what it is. You must have got your mom's good looks. So if I was the mother, the first thing that would go through my head is, okay, it's time for you to go, because that's a little bit too pervy.
Hello, Chester the molester.
Yeah, that's not something that I want to hear.
Immediately, I was just like, ugh, that is not what you say to your girlfriend's daughter.
No. Weird right off the bat. And even weirder when they go up to meet Neil, because Neil doesn't want to come down. They go up there, and Neil has his father's glasses on, and he sees Warren not as the charming debonair that Warren wants to seem to be, but instead he sees him as this, like, reptilian beast, this, like, lizard parasitic kind of thing. Yeah, kind of like a lizard dude.
But with very razor-sharp teeth.
Right, yeah. The monster looks really... really good.
I love this monster.
Super attention to detail. It's a very minimalist beast because it's just this, like, lizard dude. And it is keeping in form with a humanoid shape with no protruding features. But the way they...
kind of flatten out the nose a little, I think. But
right, but the way that they do it is so convincing. This special effects artist on this monster was doing something real special. I loved it. Massive attention to small details. And you really get to see it, too, when there's some close-up shots in this episode. But basically, the kid spends the next 30 seconds... taking off his father's glasses, putting on his new glasses. When he puts on the new ones, he sees Warren as a human.
Yeah.
Puts on his father's glasses, he sees Warren as a monster. And he keeps doing this for a while the mother is saying, Neil is a little bit strange. Let's go down and make these burgers. So they go down there and start making the burgers. There's a lot of unnecessary dialogue between the mother and Warren where they're discussing, like, family life and, you know, what kind of structure children need and etc. And the only thing that you're really going to get from this dialogue, because most of it doesn't matter, is the fact that everything the mother says is, it seems legit. It seems like something that a person would say in her situation. But everything that Warren says, it seems like it's straight from a soap opera. He's like saying he's saying the things that are too perfect. Like, everything he says is just
right, like,
too on point.
Everything is scripted.
Yeah.
Like, he's done this before.
Right. And so Warren doesn't want to, or Neil doesn't want to come down and have burgers. So Warren says that he'll go up there and talk to Neil and get him to come down, or at least, whatever. I don't know. So he goes up there, and Neil is basically telling Warren that he knows what he is. He's a monster. He's not going to have it in his house, and he's going to put a stop to it one way or another. Warren says to him, real calm, he gets down, basically Neil's on the bed. He's like holding his legs, and he's at the back of the bed trying to stay as far away from Warren as possible. And Warren gets close to him anyway and starts talking to him about these beliefs that he has that, Warren is a monster. And Neil just comes right out and tells him, I can see you're a monster by looking through my father's old glasses. Neil's probably like 4 years old, five.
No, he's older. I think he's probably like six.
Okay. He's not a very old kid, basically.
Right.
So he's just coming out and saying exactly what's on his mind. You're either going to have that happen when you're a kid, or you're going to have, like, complete silence. Neil's a little bit of a chatterbox, so he's telling Warren exactly what's going on. Warren takes the glasses from him and stomps on him. So now we are confirmed that Neil is not psychotic. There's something wrong with Warren. Whether Warren is in fact a monster or
Warren an asshole.
Could be, yeah.
Total asshole.
A psycho stepfather.
Yeah, stepping on the kid's only keepsake from his dead father.
Yes.
Fuck that guy.
Now, the scene that I was just discussing where Neil is telling Warren exactly what he's seeing, there are some really cool effects where the glasses are being, like, moved over Warren's face, and it's showing this really cool monster makeup, but just within the lenses of the glasses themselves, while the outside of the lenses still looks human.
Yes, like, everything that the Book of Dreams did wrong with special effects, they did this, like, so right.
Right. Yeah, this was good. So, Warren goes back downstairs. Neil tells his mother and sister that he's a monster, and they don't want to hear. They get all upset about this, and he says, no, no, I'm telling you, this is what's going on. He is an actual monster, and he's got to die. So Neil pulls out a gun, a revolver that his father apparently had, and the family freaks out and says, you know, don't do it, Neil, put the gun down. Everything's going to be fine. The mother actually gets in front of Warren and says, you're going to have to kill me to get to him. And
I know you don't want to hurt me.
Right. And Neil's like starting to put the gun down. And then instantly Warren, who is cocky, basically says, no, it's fine. I'll talk him out of this, and like moves the mother away. As soon as the mother is moved away, Neil pulls this gun up and just unloads into the dude's chest and head, like instantly.
Yeah.
So
I don't know where the kid learned to shoot.
From his dad, dude.
Like, you think he took him out and was like, this is how you kill a man.
As soon as dude is dead, he looks like a monster, so...
Thankfully.
Yeah. Fucking A, Neil. You badass motherfucker. I thought that was pretty cool. What about you?
Oh, I shot the sheriff. Well, that would have been his dad, though. what did you ask me? I'm sorry. I was distracted by you pulling up Bob Marley.
Yeah, I'm just excited. I like this episode.
Okay. We're talking about the episode in general. Yes, I thought this was great.
My main problem with the episode derives from the sound, the music that they're using for it.
Because I wasn't sure if you were going to bring that up.
The music is constant throughout, no matter what's happening on the screen. And it's all exactly the same. It's just this, like, Christian infomercial music?
I wrote it down. It sounds like a church documentary music, like something a church would produce to tell everyone, like, how great they are and peaceful and non-judgmental they are when really they're a lizard man inside.
Yeah, it's really weird music to pair with this episode, like, because it's all very, like, happy and moody.
Yeah, I think they're trying to, like, portray a family sitcom sort of feel.
Not sitcom. Sitcom is the wrong word to use, because it's, like, drama. It's like...
I think it's supposed to be a little bit funny.
No way.
Like, this kid's crazy. He thinks he's a lizard man.
There's no way that this is meant to be funny at all.
I think that they're trying to portray the kid as a little bit off his rocker for the longest time. The acting of
the child is awful. It is the worst acting I have. It's quite possibly the worst acting I've ever seen.
I'm not sure that any of the actors were really that great, though.
They did fine, but that kid was just shit.
Yeah, he was not very good, but...
No.
I mean, the story
It felt
was...
like someone had a gun pointed to his head the entire episode. Like, he was so nervous, he could barely speak.
Maybe the lizard man did. Do you ever think of that?
All right.
Maybe it's a real lizard man that they got.
The monster for this, I'm giving a 4. I think that the effects on it were pretty badass. They kind of play him off as a parasite in a way, because he talks to Neil, something I glazed over, he talks to Neil about having to do this to other families, and Neil doesn't have to worry because they don't ever last for too long, so he only has to put up with this for like maybe a year or two, and then his family and him will be dead.
Yeah, well, so that's comforting. He also says when someone loves someone, they hold power over them, which is really creepy and disgusting and abusive.
I think you could turn this into a movie. I think this could be really creepy.
Oh, I think this could definitely be turned into a movie.
I mean, they make movies.
The storyline is pretty strong.
They make movies and remakes of these movies called Stepfather, which is about just a normal psychotic stepfather. Throw in making him a lizard man parasite thing.
My stepfather is a lizard man.
Yeah, like that's even better. So yeah, it could definitely work.
I'm giving the monster 5. I actually thought this was one of the most convincing monsters of everything we've watched.
Cool. So what about episode rating here?
I'm gonna give it a 4.5.
Yeah?
Yeah. I liked it almost as much as I liked that, what was it, Satan in the Suburbs.
Okay. I'm going to give this one a 3.5. I think it was pretty cool. So I was very happy with it. I'm really happy to see that they had that kid shoot the dude. Like,
as bad as the kid's acting is, you were very happy to see this kid shoot the lizard man dead.
I stood up and cheered when that
And I literally was just like, well, thank God he turned into a lizard man when he was dead.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the kid'd be going to jail.
It's pretty exciting to see, because that's not something that would normally happen on a television show back then. Anyway.
Yeah, it did seem like a weird moral to do, but you keep reminding me that this is not a kid's show. I keep forgetting that it's not a kid's
show,
because most of them are pretty kid appropriate.
Yeah, but it's a mixed bag.
This message that they're sending to, like, kill the stepfather to be you just don't like or think is a monster is a little shady.
So,
but the episode's great.
What about your lesson here that you're taking away?
Oh, I don't know that there's a real lesson here.
Yeah, if you don't like... What?
Do you have one?
My lesson would probably be to hide your guns better. Like, maybe...
Yeah, well, that is probably a good lesson.
Maybe lock them up and don't...
Keep the ammunition separate.
Yeah.
Basic gun safety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's pretty cool that he killed the dude and it ended up being a monster. But that's not always the case in real life.
No. Sometimes they're just kind of a shitty human being, but not a monster.
So, yeah.
I mean, I guess you could also say that you should be wary of people who seem too perfect on the surface.
Be careful of who you bring into your home. I don't think it's a stretch to have someone take basically take an STD test before you fuck them, or also to maybe get a background check on them before you get serious with them. Like, I don't.
Did you run a background check on me?
No, but you should have run one on me.
I probably wouldn't be dating you right now.
But basically, I don't think it's unwarranted to do stuff like that when you have kittens in the mix. I think it's definitely something that's called for doing.
You don't want
to find out when it's too late that you've got like a perv that you're bringing into your house around your
kids. Oh, I see what you're saying. I think that's a little bit overkill, but like they keep talking
I think if you've got kids, then it's not overkill. I think you have to do it because it's better to be safe than sorry.
Okay, but literally the whole episode they're talking about how this is like the third date too. Like, don't introduce this person to your children.
Right.
3 dates in. That's insane.
Right before dude gets shot, we find out that he proposed and she accepted.
Right. After this is their third date and she has already accepted his proposal of marriage.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Maybe he had some like special power where he...
I'm pretty sure.
Held this weird trance over her and she just thought this is the one.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
I think from now on, she's going to be more careful about who she brings into her home.
She's
going to
run background checks.
Yeah.
Or at least kick them out when they're like, ooh, your daughter's hot like you.
So that was a fun one. Some decent episodes today. I think the highlight was the third one. The first two, I will admit, I was like zoning out during them, so I missed some things.
To be fair, the last three episodes have been the stronger of the series.
I disagree. I completely disagree.
I mean, the last episode was by far the strongest.
Mr. Schwalber was in this season.
Yeah.
So that's the best episode in this season.
You think that one was better than this one?
That's the best episode in this season, okay. Mr. Schwalber.
I mean, I think I liked them pretty equally. Like, there were very few good, strong episodes this season.
Well, we are going to have to pick our top five episodes and
at the end.
Yeah, and basically tell people which five they should watch if they only watch five.
Okay.
Get that ready on your brain box. And thanks for joining us today.
We still have to finish a whole other season.
We do.
Yeah.
I'm excited to dig into it. There's at least one episode written by Stephen King coming up.
Finally. He keeps talking about the fact that he had one.
Yeah. I don't know if he had more. I know he had one for sure. So, yeah, thanks for joining us today. And join us tomorrow for some more Monsters. We're going to be closing it out with the intro to the show Monsters. And is there any closing thoughts, Miss Cake Bitch?
No. I'm pretty empty today.
Pretty empty.
I'm exhausted. I'm dead inside.
Yeah, I'm pretty exhausted myself.
Look at me, Anna. I'm dead inside.
Yeah. Pretty tired. So, have a great night. Get some rests.
There must be something on. Oh, wow! Candy critters!
Oh!
Oh, great! It's Monsters, our favorite show.
Shh. It's starting.
Monsters!